This is a Senate Transportation Committee. It's the 14th of February. Happy Valentine's Day for those of you like me who haven't got any flowers like some people in this room. It's 1:08, and we have Senator Huggins with us, Senator Menard, and myself, Senator Kukesh. We do have a quorum, and we do have two members of our committee that are in finance, so hopefully they'll join us sometime during the session. We have before us Senate Bill 163, an act providing for and relating to the issuance of general obligation bonds for the purpose of paying the cost of municipal port projects and providing for an effective date. Could I have the administration come forward to make the presentation of the bill, please? And your name and affiliation for the record, even though we both know who you are, but we'd like for the record to have your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfeld. I'm the director of the Office of Management and Budget. And with me today is Angela Rodell. Mr. Rodell is deputy commissioner for the Department of Revenue. If it pleases the committee, I would do a very brief overview of the bill and a sectional, and then turn it over to the deputy commissioner to talk about geobonding in general and the fiscal note. I know we have individual representatives from the port projects that are reflected in the current bill available to talk to you about their projects, and we'll just go through the presentation if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. It is, yes. Please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 163 is an important bill for the state of Alaska to consider. Alaska's future rests on responsibly developing our natural resources and creating jobs and economic opportunities for our families. The state of Alaska has more miles of coastline than any other state. Combined with our remote location, our economy is reliant upon waterborne commerce to receive the goods that we use and to export the resources we developed. As introduced, Senate Bill 163 authorizes the state of Alaska to sell $350 million in general obligation bonds to fund infrastructure improvements for six port projects. With our AAA bond rating and the low cost of borrowing, we can do these improvements at a very reasonable cost to the state of Alaska. These funds would be used to rehabilitate and expand six ports throughout the state. And Alaska is unique in our economic dependence on ports. There is very limited federal funds available for port infrastructure, so the use of geobonds will help us complete these very important projects. The SB 163 contains six sections. The first section, of course, describes the amount and the purpose of the general obligation bonds. Section 2 establishes a port project fund. If the voters actually approve the bonds, a special fund is set up known as the 2012 Port Project Fund. Section 3 identifies how the funds will be awarded to the individually determined projects. Section 4 appropriates the amount associated with issuance costs of the bonds. Section 5 of the bill establishes the lapse, redemption, and reimbursement of the appropriations made in the bill. Section 6 actually establishes the ballot question that would be asked of voters in approving the general obligation bonds. And Section 7 establishes an immediate effective date. We certainly understand that there are many port projects seeking funding and that there will be interest in changes to this legislation. The governor is committed to working with the legislature to develop Alaska's infrastructure to promote economic growth across the state. As I mentioned earlier, the individual project sponsors will be here to talk with you about their specific projects. And at this time, I'd like to turn it over to the Deputy Commissioner of Revenue to talk about geobonding and the fiscal note.
Thank you. Any questions of Karen? Yes.
Senator Menard. Mr. Chairman, could you just explain to me why the individual projects weren't listed on the ballot proposition? You just have the $400 million.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Menard, let me quickly turn to the page in the bill.
Page 3.
Line 12 through 26.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the individual projects are identified through both our capital appropriation bill and in the information that will be supporting the ballot question that will go to voters in the voter information pamphlet. The individual projects do not seem to be enumerated in that, in the particular question that goes before the voters.
So on page 3, just help me with this. They will not be enumerated when the voters get...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bernard, the way that this particular bill is written, the projects are not enumerated in the actual ballot question.
And I guess I'm objecting to that.
Okay.
Legislative legal may have some other recommendations for you about how to do that if you...
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, please. Senator Huggins, you have a question? Okay, let's go ahead and go on then.
For the record, my name is Angela Rodell. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. Projects that have long lives and benefit multiple generations should be financed over the course of their respective lives. Port improvement projects such as those proposed in Senate Bill 163 have long lives and benefit multiple generations. This bill would authorize the issuance of $350 million in general obligation debt. General obligation debt is backed by the full faith, credit, and resources of the state. We currently have approximately $628 million in general obligation bonds outstanding. The state has the resources and capacity to take on the proposed additional debt. Currently, interest rates are at historic lows. This has allowed us to take advantage of the market and reduce our debt service obligations. In January of 2012, we sold $175.56 million of general obligation refunding bonds, with more than $26 million of the 2012 bonds sold to Alaskan residents. And we used the proceeds to refund $191.4 million of bonds that had been issued back in 2003. This transaction had an all-in true interest cost of 1.24% and saved the state an estimated $27 million net present value. This transaction demonstrates the attractiveness of Alaska's general obligation paper and also the current low cost of borrowing in the tax-exempt market. Any new debt issued will have the debt service structure to provide a low cost of funds and a level burden on future state budgets. As we move forward with the proposed legislation, we will work closely with you to ensure all the projects meet the necessary tests for tax exemption and can take advantage of these low rates. In November 2010, Moody's Investor Service raised the state's general obligation rating to AAA. This was followed by S&P raising our rating to AAA this past December. A AAA rating is the highest investment grade rating achievable, and it expresses an opinion of the rating agency as to the ability of the state to honor its long-term unsecured financial obligations and contracts. In reviewing our rating, Fitch, Moody's, and S&P will be looking to the final dollar amount issued and the overall plan of finance in conjunction with other state issues such as revenues, expenses, and other commitments such as the PERS and TERS unfunded liability. We have provided a fiscal note which assumes the voters will approve a $350 million in general obligation bonds. We are required by federal tax law to track all funds to final expenditure and to ensure that all funds are spent within 3 years of the date of issuance. In order to comply with these requirements, we have assumed that the bonds would be issued in multiple tranches, giving an opportunity for funds to be spent before additional debt is incurred. We assume the first issuance would come in February 2013, following the November 2012 election. Debt repayment would begin in fiscal year 2014. The costs associated with issuing the bonds, including underwriting, ratings, legal counsel, financial advisors, marketing and disclosure services, administration and printing, for a $350 million bond program would total approximately $2.965 million. The higher amount is needed to address the need for multiple bond issuances to accommodate a wide array of what are anticipated to be long-life projects, the fact that there will be a combination of both AMT and non-AMT bonds sold, and current market costs for underwriting both AMT and non-AMT paper. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Any questions from members of the committee? Hearing none, thank you very much for your presentation. And we do have some representatives from the ports that are
are here, and if you'd like to step forward, please. I'm just now getting my list, so I don't have it yet, but you're welcome. And introduce yourself to the folks if you would.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Steve Rebuffo. I am the interim director of the Port of Anchorage, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here this afternoon to speak to you about the Port of Anchorage in the Senate Bill 163. And I'd like to begin by providing a little brief summary on the services that we offer at the Port of Anchorage. We believe we are truly Alaska's lifeline. Containerized cargo through the port provides 90% of the merchandise goods for 85% of Alaska's populated areas. It is the gateway for consumer goods entering the state and an economic engine for Alaska's commerce. We are also a major fuel hub, providing 100% of the JP-8 used at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and more than two-thirds of the jet fuel burned at Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Additionally, a significant amount of gasoline and diesel used in Anchorage and South Central, as well as heating oil in rural Alaska and aviation gasoline for the entire state, also passed through our port facilities. And I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention that 75% to 80% of all the cement used to make concrete for construction projects in Alaska also cross our docks annually. Prior to the meeting this afternoon, you were given a set of handouts in advance. I'd like to call your attention to one of them, which is this distribution study that we did about 2 years ago, and it outlines the extent to which goods that enter and leave our port are distributed throughout the state. It's about 26 pages long. That includes the glossary in the back and the graphics, so it's a pretty quick read, and I hope you have the time to do so and that you find the information very informative. And you can also download it off our website, which is www.portofalaska.com, and there's some other port information there too as well. I'm a retired Air Force officer, and I had the chance to see firsthand how important the Port of Anchorage is to Alaska's military during my service as the Director of Logistics for Headquarters Alaskan Command. As you well know, our port is designated a Department of Defense National Strategic Port, one of only 19 in the nation to have such a designation. Since 2005, we've supported over 30 military deployments and moved over 18,000 pieces of equipment for the U.S. Army Alaska and the United States Transportation Command. The port has been an integral part of Alaska's transportation system for over 50 years. However, our facilities have exceeded their useful life and are in a deteriorated condition, leaving them especially vulnerable to failure in the event of a large earthquake. Additionally, limitations on the current dock's ability to handle the load capacities associated with large heavy industrial cargo has cost us to lose several business opportunities. In 2003, the municipality of Anchorage signed a memorandum of agreement with the U.S. Maritime Administration to develop the Port of Anchorage Intermodal Expansion Project. That agreement designated MARAD as our lead federal agency and tasked them with the responsibility for procurement, construction, and design activities. The objective of the expansion project is to provide modern, reliable, and expanded infrastructure to serve Alaska well into the future. Another one of your handouts is a photo of the existing facilities with the project area outlined in yellow. Our expansion effort has been scaled back from its original vision and is now focused on completing two barge berths and two ship berths in the northern area of the port. When completed, the new facilities will allow our current container ship tenants, Totem Ocean Trailer Express and Horizon Lines, to move their ships off of the old deteriorated facility into new larger and modern berthing spaces built to a higher level of seismic stability. This project will also construct two new barge berths that will provide new economic and business opportunities for shippers in the region and ready access to a rail line that extends the full length of the port. Additional benefits of the project include access to 65 acres of commercial industrial land with immediate access to intermodal connections and waterborne transportation. The combination of increased berthing space and acreage will allow us to better facilitate military deployments, accommodate larger vessels with deeper draft, and support resource development projects in the state and the region. Perhaps most importantly, particularly to those of us who work at the port, the new dock will be built to a higher degree of seismic stability, ensuring that the port will remain operational following an earthquake. The municipality of Anchorage is absolutely committed to to completing this important project and has made several important management changes to ensure future success. Last fall, we signed an updated memorandum of agreement with the U.S. Maritime Administration. Under the new agreement, all procurement, contracting, design, and construction activities will be transferred from MARAD to the municipality, the municipality, or our designee by May 31st of this year. This is a significant change and represents a new direction for the project. The agreement also formalized an oversight committee that had been in place since January 2011 and which meets on a weekly basis. In addition, MARAD now has a full-time representative on site to allow for direct communication with the agency. An improved quality control and quality assurance program has been established to ensure construction work is completed correctly, and the municipality is now insured for liability with performance bonds from the contractor. The Corps of Engineers is providing a third-party review of the construction which has been done to date and a review of the design to help guide project moving forward. In the past, this project has received funding from the state and federal grants combined with port funds. This has allowed the project to progress. However, receiving piecemeal funding for a large multi-year project is extremely inefficient. In order to successfully move forward, to better control costs, and to be able to exploit economies of scale, we need to have complete funding up front. In our annual request to the legislature, the municipality's highest priority was to secure $350 million in funding for this project. The amount of money in SB 163 is both generous and substantial, but it will not complete the project. In closing, I want to thank the chair and members of the committee for your kind attention, Ms. Rehfeld and Ms. Rodell for their opening remarks, and for our other speakers here today. We're a maritime state. Whether large or small, regional or local, ports play an essential and critical role in our lives. However, far too often, ports are overlooked as focus falls on other modes of transportation. This is particularly true at the federal level. SB 163 provides critical funding for port infrastructure across the state, and I'm encouraged by these efforts to invest and improve Alaska's port infrastructure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions from members of the committee? I have one. If you said that $200 million will not complete the project, how much money do you need to complete your project? And do you intend to come back to the legislature for more money? What's the intention of the Port of Anchorage?
The municipality's
municipality, okay.
$350 million.
$350. Okay. Senator Huggins.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess just to put that in, I'm not from Anchorage, but to put that in perspective, as I recall, the price tag was over in excess of $1 billion at one time. So it's been pared back.
Before the project, through the chair to Senator Huggins, yes, before the project was pared back
right.
to focusing exclusively on the north end, that was an amount that's been mentioned, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was trying to get to that number. Thank you for that, yeah. Any other questions? If not, thank you so much for your presentation this afternoon. Do we have somebody here from the Matanuskas, is it in the borough? Yes. Oh, that's right. I saw you sitting there. For the record, would you please state your name and affiliation and give us your testimony? And I hope that whole document there is not going to be your testimony.
No, sir.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Joe Perkins. I'm the executive project manager for the Metsu Borough for the Port McKenzie Rail Line Extension, which connects the Port McKenzie facilities with the existing railroad in Houston. What I'd like to do, everybody's pretty familiar with this project because it's been funded for about 4 years in various appropriations. So what I'd really like to cover is what has happened over this last year to the project and where we stand right now as far as the project's concerned. The Surface Transportation Board released their final environmental impact statement on March 25th of this last year, 2011, and approved the Max Central Houston route. There were basically three routes under consideration, and they did approve the route from the port to Houston. It's about a 32.1-mile extension. The STB then released their record of decision, or ROD, on the final EIS on November 21st, 2011, with an effective date of December 23, 2011. This ROD authorizes the ARRC to construct and operate a new rail line connecting Port McKenzie to the ARRC's existing main line near Houston. And just as a little bit of an example, this EIS, which there is no federal money involved in this project, but the STB is a federal organization, and they did the EIS with us paying for it, with the state paying for it. We spent approximately $10 million on the EIS, and it took us 3 years to complete it, and 650 pages or something like that in length. So it's an extensive document, and it's a huge milestone to get past. We were preparing to immediately go into construction the minute that the EIS was approved and the ROD was issued. So we had on the street a contract to build the embankment for the first 5 miles of the rail extension, and we opened bids on that December 6, 2011, and awarded a construction contract to Bristol Construction for the embankment of the first 5 miles of the rail extension. So, and this was money that we had in hand. In addition to that, that contract included the completion of the bimodal loop, which is a 1 mile rail loop at the port, and the construction of an access road for the University of Alaska property, because we have property that we have taken and their property, and we cut off the access with our rail, so we had to give them additional access. So that is also in that contract. It's about a $17 million contract, and it has been awarded, and clearing should be starting very, very shortly. The reason we went with that first 5 miles to build it first was that's an area that had some real high fills, 70 and 80 foot high, and it was an area that's extremely wet. And so we wanted to get the settlement out and have the fill sit there as long as we possibly could until so when we put the tracks on and so on, that we won't be getting more settlement. So we will go in and correct it after a couple of years, and then and correct the settlement and go ahead and place the ties, track, and so on. The construction work, which we had contracts out before for the bimodal facility, and the bimodal facility, which is this mile loop, was not part of the EIS. So we were under no constrictions on building it. So we went ahead and we built over two-thirds of it with prior money, and those two contracts, which were to Bristol Construction and to Quality Asphalt, about $10 million, were completed this last year. So right now, we have moved something like 3.6 million cubic yards of material, and we are well on our way to completing a 150-acre level pad, which will contain this rail loop and the facilities to utilize that loop. Following the identification of the route in March of this year, we were able to do a detailed cost estimate for the project. Prior to that time, we really didn't know where it was going, and each of those routes had different costs on them, and we did not spend the money to go into really detailed cost estimates for those. But with the selection of the route, we did go into cost estimates, and we have a cost that we're working toward right now, which I feel very good about. The total project cost is $272.5 million, and that gives us everything we need. Of that 272, to put it in perspective, 92.5 million has been previously appropriated in four general fund appropriations going all the way back to FY 2008 when the EIS was funded for 10 million. So we have 272.5 minus 92.5, we are 180 million short for completion of the entire project. Now, With the bond issue, of which there's $110 million in, we will still be $70 million short of completing the project. The project schedule is totally dependent on financing. Engineering for the whole project will be completed in the next 3 or 4 months. The way this project is laid out, we can award contracts. We don't have to wait on other construction to be finished to award another contract on the rail embankment. So our schedule for completion of this is totally dependent on the funding. Now, I will mention just a couple of things. When you get into the federal EISs, the mitigation, we had two fairly large mitigation measures. The first mitigation measures is the STB required the ARRC and us to comply with a list of over 100 environmental measures. And they also instructed us to go out and hire a third-party contractor who will work for the feds in D.C. to monitor all of this to make sure that we comply with these 100 or so measures. We estimate the cost of that at $2 million alone. The Corps of Engineer permit, which is under preparation right now and should be issued within the next couple of weeks, is going to require the project to mitigate all wetlands that's impacted by the project. And we anticipate that they will probably utilize our investment in a wetlands bank to do this. So it's another $2.5 million we figure that it'll cost us for mitigation. So the total mitigation for this project, which is an important number, is going to be approximately $4.5 million just to mitigate the EIS. Now, let me tell you real quick what we would do with the $110 million contained in the GEO bonds. Assuming it would be available in the spring of 2013, we would utilize it to construct about 18.5 more miles of embankment, of rail embankment, and manufacture ballast rock up at Prairie. So because we've got quite a bit of ballast that we've got to manufacture, and it'll take us about more than 1 year to do it. And also we'll look at other long lead time materials to buy. So we would be using that $110 million to go ahead and complete 18.5. And that gets you up to around 23 or 24 miles, and it leaves about 7 or 8 miles to go. At 7 or 8 miles, we'll be funded within that $70 million that we're going to be short. And that is a relatively easy construction that's across the farmland. There's almost no fill required, so it'll be a much cheaper thing. The other thing the $70 million will be to put ties, tracks, ballasts, and all the railroad-specific items on it. So that's sort of a status that we have. We're $180 million short. We very much appreciate the $110 that's in here. And we are moving this project along as fast as we possibly can. It's a very interesting project in that this is a state project, even though it's tightly controlled by the federal government. Okay. I'm prepared to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Questions from members of the committee? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to recap, that 100 loop, that is 100 cars that continuously can go without stopping. Is that correct, that loop that we're talking about?
Yes, the loop is a mile long, and it's the only one in Alaska.
Yes.
And you can develop on either side of the track or in the center, mm-hmm. and it will hold at least 100 car train around there for loading or whatever. And it is a bulk materials type of a loading facility. Now, there will be other spurs that will come off of the rail at the port to support other activities. For instance, we have a fuel storage facility that has just leased, has signed a lease with us, and they are intending to use rail to move fuel to Fairbanks and north. So there are going to be other people using this other than that loop, but the loop gives us the ability to move bulk product. And it's really the only place in Alaska that you have anything like that where bulk product from Fairbanks or from up north could be moved.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Do we have Mr. Jim Hunt from Seward in the room? Yes, would you come forward, please? I just want to remind everybody, and I should have done this earlier, that we have about five lists of people who may want to testify today. So kindly, if you would, keep your testimony to the amount of money in the bill and to the project that we have before us, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Menard, Senator Huggins. It is my great pleasure to be here today because I believe we have one of the most exciting projects that Alaska has seen in a long time. And I'm speaking specifically of the Coastal Villages Home Porting Project. And just to give you just a brief background on the project, over two decades, the city of Seward has invested specifically in infrastructure and specifically in harbor infrastructure in the Seward Marine Industrial Complex, or Center as it's called. And a little over a year ago, the city received an inquiry from the president of the Coastal Villages Region Fund and asked if we would partner with them in their home porting effort to leave Seattle and come to Seward.
Just a quick question. Is that the CDQ groups?
Yes.
That's normally what people recognize this name as. As I heard that, a CDQ boats then.
Right. There are six fleets.
Six fleets, yeah.
And this is the largest fleet. And they have an economic impact just in moorage, vendor support, and maintenance in Seattle at this time of just that alone of $20 million. So if I just may just expand a little bit here, communications took place between the city and other related interests, and we developed a partnership with Coastal Villages. They looked at other cities in the southeast and up north. They were looking for ice-free port, rail, and air access, and Seward had everything they needed. So we literally partnered up with the Coastal Villages. We've been meeting with them and their representatives for more than a year. And the impact that this is going to have on Alaska, and it's just not a Seward project, because there's not one city in Alaska that can support Coastal Villages. This is a partnership. And this is going to impact Anchorage, the southeast, all of the peninsula, because they're all going to work with us and work together. And they've pledged their support to do so, to make this a success. And at this point, SMIC, as we call it, the Industrial Center, has a great base to grow from. That's what Coastal's looking. They're looking for uplands. They need the warehouse space. They need the ice-free port and additional infrastructure to bring the whole fleet to the bay. Some of their vessels are already in our harbor now and are in dry dock. They're already transitioning forward, and we're really excited about that. And the greatest impact is going to be for us in Alaska is, and for them, is A, they're going to cut their fuel cost at least in half. Just one trip of refueling is $2 million for the fleet to leave Seattle to come up to the fishing grounds. That will be in Alaska, revenue generated and the jobs attendant to that. The salaries are, and depending on the year and the fluctuation, just for this one fleet ranges from $5 million to $10 million a year. And it's growing, and they are growing. The maintenance, or the flying their employees from Seattle to Anchorage, $2 million a year. They will cut that in half. And we also have already received contact and are speaking to other CDQ groups who want to follow in kind. And we couldn't be more pleased. I mean, this is a good, feel-good project. Bringing them home, they are literally, and they coined the term, and we've heard it before, Alaskanized the fleet. We'll be able to provide jobs. We'll be able to train them at Habtec, at our state-of-the-art maritime center, certify their skippers, their people. So we will be training these people and keeping them home. which is important. And the salaries that will be paid will just not turn over maybe once down in Seattle. They're going to turn over and over up here where they belong. And so we're just asking your support and continued support for this great project.
Questions from members of the committee? Could you just take a second to tell us what the $10 million would buy? What would your port benefit from? Additional berths, additional storage areas? Or
what this project is going to do is enclose the foundation of infrastructure at our Marine Center now. It was never fully enclosed. This will provide breakwater, docks, and some additional infrastructure so we can enclose it and support their fleet, but just not their fleet, because they're only going to be there so many months a year. We'll be able to bring in and serve other customers. In addition, more fish processing, more offloading, more support. We've received inquiry from oil companies with the related oils and leases that are now being considered. They're looking for a nice report, especially in the winter, so they don't have to transfer everything back down. We've received calls from Seattle and other parts in Washington, large maritime-related businesses, very excited, trying to get in on the ground floor. And this project isn't the finale. We'll obviously, as it grows in success, we have room and lands to develop. We have plenty of room.
Very good. Thank you very much. Any other questions? If not, thank you for your presentation this afternoon. Yes. Do we have someone here from the Bristol Bay Borough? Would you please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record?
My name is Dan O'Hara, Mayor of the Bristol Bay Borough. Senator Huggins, Senator Menard, Chairman, Senator Kukesh, thank you for the opportunity of coming today. And we are the first borough in the state of Alaska, and we became a borough for the express purpose of education. And we are the sockeye capital of the world, and I will explain that to you briefly here in my presentation today. We have two major capital projects. The first one was a 200-foot interlocking steel dock that we just finished in 2011, and the project cost $10 million, of which we put in 2.5 of our own money. And thank you, legislators, and the governor for helping us out with that project. And now we're looking at phase two, where we have a dock that's 30 years old. It has steel piling. And I believe I gave you one of these folders like this to look at earlier today. Now, that dock needs to be remodeled. It's corroding badly. And so we have $6 million of the $16 million we need to do this dock. And so that's not a bad start. We learned a great deal from the first dock. Most municipalities are not in the business of building docks. And we had a couple of setbacks, cost us a little extra money, but we did okay on that. PND is our engineering firm, and they've done a good job for us along this line. We do have a cost of $16 million, of which we have six ready to go and would complete the project. The first dock that we built, or this last year, we built a dock. It's a steel interlocking dock, earth-filled, and so it does not have a weight limitation on it with 40-foot containers and 20-foot containers. And we are also looking at, we've already started processing this project for some additional lightering space, some of the HUD housing right next to the dock, and you look at that in the folder. We're going to purchase some of that property and level it off so we can have containers stacked there and ready to go. And that's very, very important. Let me tell you how the process works. Those people who fish 1,800 rip permits in Bristol Bay, 800 set netters, they go out and they catch the fish, they break it to a tender, the tender takes it to the processor. Lynn Shaw back with Bristol Bay Contractors and others back up their semi to it. The 40-foot van is being loaded as the processing plant processes these fish. They hook onto it, bring it over to our dock, and leave it there. And then if it's pressure frozen, it gets plugged into 220 system. It's ours now to take care of Northland and whoever else comes in there. We have two forklifts, fairly new, two huge cranes. You'll see that in the folder. And we move this product then onto the lighter, to the people who are moving the freight, and it goes from there. Now, 85% of everything that happens in Bristol Bay goes across the Bristol Bay Borough Dock. I got a letter from the Bureau the other day, and we had 991 people. A year ago, we had 1,035 now, but in the summertime, we get 10,000 people, and they're housed at the processing plant. So that is very, very important. additional properties for lightering, as I mentioned to you. In 2008, we had 33 million harvest. And 2009, we had 31 million harvest. And 2009, we had 29 million. And 11, we had 22 million. And this year in 2012, we will have 20 million fish processed. That's a predicted harvest for the Bristol Bay. we completed the first project on time and within budget, so we're doing pretty well there. We do our own dredging. We talked to the Corps of Engineers, but they never answered us, so, you know, not much coming from the feds. That's okay. We have a new crane that can reach out there. There's 27 feet of water. It's very important if you understand that it never goes dry. Also, there's two ports in Alaska that, on Alaska, Dutch Harbor and Bristol Bay Borough Port. Containers come in full and they go out full, and that's a pretty powerful statement to make. And you can tell from this project we're about five in a nation in our works here. So I think that's about all we have to say. We could, if this bond goes forward, probably be looking at 2013. We are ready, and that's very good. I'm the chair of the Conference of Mayors, and we encouraged the mayors the other day to support this project across the state of Alaska. It does great things for our local economy. The last thing I want to mention is in the back of your folder, you have a list of villages and communities that the borough serves. The mayor of Nome asked me the other day, what are you doing talking about the Bristol Bay Borough having to take containers up to Nome? Well, very simple. ICE is in Nome. ICE is in Kuskokwim. ICE is in Inukshuk. The Bristol Bay port is open. We have huge lightering areas. All these people come in, and their vans come there. And Northland runs down to Dutch Harbor, gets a crab, goes someplace else. They can't sit in Seattle and wait for the ICE to go out in Nome. They come to our dock, come in full, we take them back out to their community. So we do service a lot of areas in this. And I'd like to use a little analogy, probably in closing today. You remember a number of years ago, Michael Jordan threw in 69 points in one game, one basketball game. And in that same game, there was a rookie who threw in 2 points. Almost as good as your Indian joke there, Senator. And at the end of the game, of course, the press came up and talked to Michael Jordan. You know, this is historic. And, of course, they talked to the rookie, too. And he said, what was it like, you know, getting this many points? He said, Michael Jordan and I put in 71 points. That's kind of how we feel with these guys who take all the time in the world for making their big presentations.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins has a question for you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the basketball analogy, as I recall, Wilt Chamberlain scored just over 100.
Yes, I'll come back another time and talk to you.
Yeah, but in any event, I would just like to pass on to the mayor. I have had multiple people that have reflected in your region, and whenever your name is mentioned, it's always very, very complimentary. So I just pass that on to you. I don't know you, so I'm not trying to become your best friend by the comment.
Well, I'd like you to be my best friend.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Us mayors, we're full of ourselves.
Yeah. Do we have anybody here from the city of Monarch? Well, I don't have anybody online. That's right. Let's go on to, we'll wait for a minute, Ketchikan. We have somebody from the city of Ketchikan here. I don't have them online either. No, we're not going to do that.
Okay, we're good now? Okay, this is Dave Kiefer. I'm actually the mayor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. We have cities and boroughs down here. Actually, I think we were the first... We were also one of the first boroughs, though. By down here, I'm not sure it was by choice. Chairman Kukesh and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough strongly supports Senate Bill 163, particularly the provisions that fund the construction of an Alaska Marine Highway System dock at Ward Cove. Ever since the Marine Highway System moved its headquarters to Ketchikan nearly a decade ago, a dock and layup facility in Ward Cove has been a very high priority for us. It took on even greater importance with an agreement reached about a year ago between the Alaska Department of Transportation and ADA. Under that agreement, DOT will transfer property to ADA to allow the expansion of the ADA-owned Ketchikan shipyard, but it requires that a functional replacement facility be provided to DOT for their layup. It's our understanding that the proposed dock will meet that requirement. There's also interest on the part of the state and federal governments in a joint use facility for the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration and the Alaska Marine Highway System. This would continue the home porting of the NOAA ship Fairweather in Ketchikan. In short, the Ward Cove Dock project makes a lot of sense, both to the economic vitality of our community and also for the Marine Highway because it has to scuffle to find winter layup spaces for its fleet. Since Ketchikan is also becoming the primary location for winter ferry system maintenance, it does make the most sense for the layup facility to be here. As recently as last night, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly reaffirmed its support for this project, and the borough is absolutely willing to do whatever is necessary to get the dock built and operational. We thank you for your time and consideration this afternoon.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm glad you're online. I had you down, but I had it to answer questions only, so I'm glad you were able to make a presentation to us this afternoon. Are there members of the committee who would like to ask a question of the presenter? No. Well, thank you very much. And did you want to continue the...
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Michael Newsel, the Deputy Commissioner for Marine Operations with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities overseeing the Alaska Marine Highway System. As Mayor Kiefer alluded to, the Department of Transportation supports this project as a follow-on to the functional replacement of our facilities in South Berth and out to Ward Cove. So just a brief history, if I may, of the progress on this project to date, because it is underway and this is a continuation of that. Initially, $5 million was appropriated to purchase the property in Ward Cove that the Department of Transportation now owns and now intends to relocate our South Berth facilities to. That consists of about 10 acres of upland property and 20 acres of marine tidelands property. An additional $3.4 million was appropriated to rehabilitate the veneer building, what used to be the plywood mill veneer building that is on those uplands, into what will become the Alaska Marine Highway System Marine Engineering Building. All of our warehousing, our engineering staff, and spare parts for the ships will be housed in that building. So it does make sense to have the layup facility adjacent to that, which is where the work will be done. The engineering staff will be just ashore from there. In addition, last year, $500,000 was appropriated to do a feasibility study of that property to determine what is possible and what it will cost to build a marine infrastructure facility, dock facility, that will functionally replace South Berth and also consider the potential to partner with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to homeport the NOAA ship Fairweather at that berth as well. So those things are all ongoing. The veneer building renovation is actually under construction right now as we speak. The feasibility study kicked off last month, and it will be progressing throughout this year. So we are making good progress on that. The $10 million in this GO bond bill will not fully fund, I don't believe, the marine structure. The accompanying note that goes with that states that it is one time in nature and not expected to fully fund that facility, but it'll be a great start in getting that facility started. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of design and construction to determine what is possible in that location. And with that, Mr. Chairman, as the Red Lantern Award presenter for the last of your series here, I will take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much. Do we have Mr. Martin Moore on from Amonok? Or Wilbur Hooch, Mayor Hooch? If not, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else in the room would like to testify before we go on to our CS and to our other materials? Would you like to come forward and state your name for the record, please?
Good afternoon. Thank you. Christine Klein with Chilista Corporation. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Marshall Port and Quarry Access Road. and also in support of the Immonic Port at the mouth of the Yukon River. Thank you for your time. I'm not sure why Martin was not online, but we have sent a letter as the regional corporation for the region in support of this project. I'd like to speak about the Marshall Port and Access Road. This is a project that has been entered into the CAPSIS system and could either be placed in the capital program or in the bond program. We would prefer it be in the capital program because of the aggregate that is needed in the Yukon Delta for all projects. Currently, the cost of the project is $11.6 million. The port, where there currently is no port on the middle Yukon River at all, would be 3 miles downstream of Marshall on a bedrock bluff and have a port facility, dock, 2-acre staging area, and a 5-mile road to the Pilcher Mountain Quarry. The community of Marshall has committed to maintain and operate both the road and the port facilities, and a separate road accessing the village would be paid for with Indian Reservation Roads Fund linking the village to the port. The need currently, to give you a sense, is rock aggregate is extremely scarce in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, often making all of our projects cost prohibitive for both the villages, the corporations, and the state of Alaska itself. Currently, there are quality material is needed on almost every project in the region for transportation, energy, and village projects. Currently, aggregate is being barged in from Nome, over 260 miles away to the north, which easily adds 20% higher costs on all projects. Region construction is already costly due to these high construction costs, but it is also complicated by the costs of barging in a marine environment, the weather, the shallow access upriver, and other complicating factors that are at a cost of $20,000 per day when you use barges. There are currently no Marshall nor Middle Yukon ports that are also needed for north to south fuel deliveries, propane, natural gas, material staging, and transfer. In reviewing the Department of Transportation and federal projects in the region for the next 5 years, I was able to find 6 Indian Reservation Road projects, each at a cost of over $1.9 million apiece. These are very small rural roads, community roads. And when backing out the transportation costs, if there was an in-region quarry source, it would save over $2.5 million, half a million on every project. In looking at the State Department of Transportation's projects, I was not able to get any information from them when I made the requests, so I looked at the next 5 years' plan of airport projects. There are 6 airport resurfacings throughout the region. 40,000 cubic yards per airport is typically what's required. Times 6 airports, you're looking at a half a million dollar savings on every airport at a $3 million savings over 5 years if there was an in-region quarry. There are 2 airport runway extensions that have been requested at 1,000 feet each at 233,000 cubic yards for each of those. We're looking at a cost savings in transportation alone of $4.48 million. 2 airport total relocations at 700,000 cubic yards would basically cost the state over $68 million. If there was an in-region quarry source, again, as needed for airports because of the structural and surface course that's needed, that would be $13.5 million over the next 5 years. That does not even look at roads, energy projects, transmission lines, or schools. The Yukon to Kuskokwim road corridor that has been requested and design money has been put in the budget for is a project that would cost about $124 million. The savings alone for a project of this size is going to be over $25 million. That comes to a total of $253 million in transportation projects alone over the next 5 years in the Yukon-Kuskokwim. Without an in-region source of quarry rock, there is going to be $48.8 million at a minimum spent in unnecessary transportation costs. Pilcher Mountain Rock has been utilized in the Marshall area for the recent reconstruction and relocation of the Marshall Airport. The Department of Transportation requested and was granted access to the existing quarry, and their material mapping, their coring, and their testing indicates that it is very high-quality material that will be available for construction over the next 20 to 25 years. Cost savings alone of 15 to 20% can be expected on projects from in-region, as well as the Amonic Port that was going to be spoken about just earlier and has a significant amount of need for rock. The support for the project includes the two area tribes, Mashar-Kulik Village Corporation, the Association of Village Council Presidents, the City of Marshall, the Chulista Regional Native Corporation, and in the past, the Alaska Department of Transportation. I think it's unprecedented to see this much support for a project in our region, and that alone is quite notable. But we would ask for your support on this project, whether it be in the bond package or in the capital program. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, I did talk to Mr. Andrew Guy, and right now the project is going to stay in the CATSIS program with the understanding that when this goes to finance, that the opportunity is also going to be in finance to consider this project there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Any questions for the presenter? No, thank you so much for your testimony this afternoon. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Senator Huggins, Menard, and Senator Kukesh. I'm Pat Branson. I'm the mayor of the city of Kodiak.
Oh, thank you, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I am here to respectfully request your support to include in Senate Bill 163 the city of Kodiak's top priority, which is to replace Pier 3 in your GO bond proposal. Kodiak is the third largest fishing port in the country, and Pier 3 is a critical piece of infrastructure that sustains our local economy. That's not just for the city of Kodiak, but the entire island, including six villages. It's one of our city's and the island's main cargo piers and our only facility for handling deep draft vessels and containerized cargo. All of our goods come in through Pier 3. All of our goods go out through Pier 3. That includes fish products as well as sustainable goods for keeping residents on our island. It's our economic and physical lifeline. The current pile support structure was built in the early 70s and expected to reach the end of its design life in 4 to 5 years. And the existing pier experiences corrosion, wear, and limited capacity requires extensive maintenance to keep it operational. Replacement costs are currently estimated to be about $33 million, depending on the type of dock structure that will be selected. This year, the city of Kodiak will select the optimal dock alignment and complete geotechnical work and a wave motion study to determine the appropriate structure type, sheet, pile, bulkhead, or pile supported. So we'll have that information. Since this is a critical piece of infrastructure, we would request that it be replaced in your Senate Bill 163. Our legislative delegation supports this important request, and we hope that you would too. Any questions?
Any questions from members of the committee? Thank you very much for your presentation. Sure, absolutely. Is there anybody else in the audience? Could you? We're going to take a break. Let's go back onto the record, and what we're going to do here, just so everybody understands the process here, is we have a CS that we need to adopt. Once we adopt the CS, we'll ask the city of Kotzebue to come up and make some statements, and we do have an amendment from another member of the Senate that is here. It's my intention, after we take those two actions, to move this bill over to finance. and for the particular reason that we've had many, many calls from people who want to be involved in this, and I think the Finance Committee is a more appropriate place. I thought we could take care of two and be done with it, but it certainly looks like that's not going to be the case. So what we're going to do is try to do that and move it over to Finance as soon as we can. So what, with that, I'm going to ask...
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask one question very quickly. Coastal Zone Management, I'm just wondering if there's anybody in the audience operatively involved that with it could spend it, without it couldn't spend it, or vice versa?
I don't know.
The money that we're asking for allocation.
Does anybody in the audience have enough of a grasp of Coastal Zone Management to see if any of these monies would have an impact one way or the other on whether or not we could spend it? Anybody in the state, have you even considered that question?
Mr. Chairman, Karen Mayfield, for the record, the projects that we have in the governor's bill are all existing projects that are underway, so I do not believe there would be any issues with or without Coastal Zone Management.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. Let's go ahead and Senator Olson, would you come forward, please? What we have before us is a CS. It's a CS it's backslash M. And I'd like to see if we can have somebody from the committee move that to have it properly before us.
Are we on the record, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we're on the record. I'm sorry.
With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like the city manager of Cotsville to come on up.
Yes, just come up to sit with you. Sure. We have a CS before us. I'd like to have a motion to adopt it as our working document. Yes, Senator Thomas.
I would move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 163 be adopted as our working document today.
Thank you. Is there an objection? Seeing as we have before us that adds the city of Kotzebue then to the list, we'd like to have Mr. Derek Martin, who's a city manager of Kotzebue, to make some statements. And Senator Olson, you're certainly welcome to do that too, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to come on up here and testify on this bill. Obviously, ports are very important to rural Alaska. We are a marine, especially those of us that live on the coast, are a marine population. And with that, Mr. Derek Martin can give you the specifics related to the request on the CS.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, Derek Martin, city manager for Kotzebue. The city's been lobbying for this deep water port for well over 40 years. In fact, the earliest study on this port was dated back to 1973 when the Corps completed its first of its many studies. Subsequent years, we've had at least a dozen or so studies to include road, airport relocation, and roads to resources from Kotzebue to Chicago Creek, from Kotzebue to Kiana, Norvik, Selawik, and most recently the Ambler Mining District. Cape Blossom has been identified as a possible logical termini for that. Currently, large ocean-going vessels must anchor out 15 miles out in Kotzebue Sound from their lighterage vessels, transverse material, cargo, fuel, goods, what have you, through a shallow channel. We just heard through the NOAA bathymetry study this summer that the channel is getting shallower. It used to be 6 feet. Now they're saying it's about 5.5 feet. So now we're combating that. We feel that the cost of lightering is adding 20% to 30% of the overall cost of fuel and goods. This project has been studied well over 40 years. In 1983, engineering firm looked at combining the deep water port with airport relocation, and extensive environmental reviews were completed back then. The city works closely with all entities in Kotzebue, NANA, the Northwest Arctic Borough, KIC, the local tribe, and the Native Village of Kotzebue, Manilik. They have all submitted letters of support and resolutions, all recognizing the need to lower the cost of living and increase economic development and opportunities. 2 weeks ago, myself and the mayor of Kotzebue traveled to D.C. and met with three members of the Coast Guard, Admiral Zhukov, Admiral Atkins, and Captain Burns, who all indicated a strong desire of wanting to move forward, having a more northern presence in the Arctic to deal with the moving forward with the shell exploration, emergency response. We know that this summer alone, Shell will be bringing up 22 vessels in the Chukchi Sea, which is just right in the city's backyard. We also received letters of support from Shell and ConocoPhillips indicating a desire to utilize the Cape Blossom port if and when it's built. We work closely with DOT, Fairbanks staff on the road to Cape Blossom as well as the port of Cape Blossom. In 2010, the city received innovative readiness training assistance through the Department of Defense, where they provided a ground survey for DOT. This year, we applied again for another round of IRT assistance for a construction of a 2-mile Pioneer Road and a bridge crossing. Gravel sources for this project have been identified closely on the peninsula, so that's a plus. I've laid down a couple of packets. I apologize I didn't have all packets. I have 4 packets for you. In one of those, in the maps and figures, there is a chart that NOAA did recently, which would indicate Cape Blossom has deep water, minus 35. So that's a big plus, and that's in the packet. I apologize. I'll make more packets and get those prepared this afternoon. So we understand that this regional deep water port will have many positive advantages such as lower fuel costs for heating and transportation, lower freight rates for food, materials, goods, and equipment, employment opportunities, early fuel and freight distribution is one of them. At the development of this deep water port, we can offshoot a road to Nimiac Point, which is just off on the other side of Cape Blossom there, and get fuel to the upriver villages when Cobuk Lake is ice-free during high water. Currently, that's not an option, and a lot of the villages have to fly their fuel in, so we hope to be able to help throughout that. It will be a more northern Arctic port for emergency response and other logistical needs. Future infrastructure and road construction to Kyan and Norvik Selvik, the road intertie, and a potential terminus for the Ambil Mining District. Establishment of a Coast Guard station and a potential safe harbor port of refuge in Kotzebue Sound. So in closing, this document that I laid out in front of you was just to demonstrate that a lot of work has already been completed and we're trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. That it's been studied for over 40 years. We have regional support. We've got several environmental studies already complete from the early 80s. We continue to effortlessly lobby for this project. We're paying $7.35 a gallon at the pump, while some upriver villages are paying $10 a gallon. We don't want to be in a position where we have to compete with other Arctic ports. We simply want to develop this port to lower our cost of living so we don't see any more out-migration. The total estimated cost, rough order of magnitude, was $60 million. But as I mentioned earlier, if we can get some previous monies allocated for this project, $5 million, call it phase one, and get the military through the IRT program to build the 2-mile road and the bridge, estimated at $5 million, that's $10 million. So $50 million might get it there, and I appreciate your consideration, appreciate your time this afternoon, and I am available for questions.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you say 15 miles off the coast is where large ships or the fuel oil that was brought in? That must be a relatively small cargo ship then compared to the ones you're talking about to have gotten that coast close.
Correct. I believe those are anchored out at 35 feet. The ones that we get anchored out are roughly around 22, 23 feet.
And are there a large number of those that you anticipate visiting on a regular basis, or is it more the idea that if, in fact, the Ambler District gets developed, that will require those larger ships that you're talking about that on occasion to visit now?
Absolutely. We believe that 35 feet does exist out there at Cape Blossom, and we would envision ships of that size and of that nature to come up to Kotzebue.
And which ones already you said that are...
Well, currently none of them can because the
I mean which ones are currently sitting off 15 miles or whatever and have to have lightering barges back and forth?
The Northland barges, the Crowley barges, those ships.
And they are delivering what kind of, or picking up what kind of?
General cargo, fuel, freight, cars, vehicles, building materials.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Egan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here. Do you anticipate having to dredge this after the construction? I mean, would there be a timeline where the Corps or someone would have to come in and redredge it?
Currently not at this point.
So
we
don't anticipate
dredging. Earlier concepts indicated a dredged scenario, but after receiving a NOAA preliminary study this summer, that would indicate it's a straight shot, no dredging.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? No, thank you. I'm sorry, Senator Thomas.
I guess I missed that there. You found another channel that would get you there, and that's why you're just interested in the port facility. You're not concerned that there will be dredging necessary, and for all of these years you didn't find the other channel, and I guess that's part I'm missing.
Actually, there's one channel that they currently use to go straight to Kotzebue, but the bathymetry map that NOAA had presented in as part of that packet indicates a straight shot from where they're currently anchoring all the way to the deep water port. So no additional channel. It's deep, out to 50 feet out there.
Can you direct us to that in there?
Yep.
Which tab we're going to look?
Under the last page on maps and figures.
Last page on maps and figures.
Mr. Chairman, if I could help answer that question.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
Senator Thomas, there is the city of Kotzebue, which is under right now under the situation where you got a lighter into Kotzebue. A road would go out to Cape Blossom, which is a number of miles away from Cape Blossom, straight out to where the barges are, is a deep channel, and that's where the savings is going to be happening. And that's what we're trying to do is get the road in, get the port in place, and then you can those deep draft barges and ships can then come on in.
Okay, thank you.
So, Senator Olson, they would not be going to Kotzebue, they would be going to Cape Blossom, and the road is how long?
About 8 miles.
8 miles, but it gets you to a deep water port.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from members of the committee? No, thank you very much for your presentation. We have a thank you. That covers the Kotzebue area. We have another amendment that Senator Olson has proposed. It's offered in the Senate. Oh, I wanted to make a comment first that Senator Thomas's motion to accept the CS was a backslash M is the one we're working with now. That's been not objected to by the committee. So what we have now is an amendment from Senator Olson that's before us, or it's not before us, but it's presented. The City of Nome, Port of Nome improvements for $50 million. Is there a motion by members of the committee to adopt this amendment to the CS? Senator Olson? It's been moved. Is there an objection? Seeing none, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nome has long been a port, and obviously during the last several years, during the last several weeks, there's been the run by the Coast Guarder Healy, as well as the Russian tanker, the Renda, that came on up to aid Nome with its situation where we were during the deepest freeze we can think of for a long period of time, where they came and delivered fuel products to the Nome area. And so in order to try and accommodate that, even now with this, they were only able to come within a half mile or so of Nome. This the port has been something that work has been done on. And so with that, Mayor Michaels is on. She can give you more of the details of what is needed and what it'll cover. And with that, we thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Any questions, Senator Olson? If not, let's go to Mayor Denise Michaels from the City of Nome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. The City of Nome supports Senate Bill 163 and respectfully requests an amendment to add the City of Nome's priority request for $50 million to extend the causeway. Our data documents an increase in Arctic marine traffic into Nome and throughout the Bering Straits. There's a huge need to develop the infrastructure and to meet the demands of the opening of the Arctic and extend the existing facilities in Nome and strategically place the state of Alaska for the future. These investments are required to allow more drilling and exploration, will provide the public a sense of comfort that resources are close by for environmental response, to provide the national security for as more traffic traverses the Arctic waters, and for search and rescue operations. This investment will also create new jobs and spur economic development. As most of you know, air transportation is the most reliable and common method of transportation throughout the year. During the summer months, though, Nome is the hub for ocean shipping. Our port handles community resupply, both for freight and fuel, along with destinational cruise ship traffic. There's been intense state, federal, and local planning underway to expand and develop an Arctic deep draft port. These efforts have brought many projects to the forefront, identifying the need to develop a deep draft port for vessel fleet that will be required to explore, design, create, and maintain the services for this development. NOAM does serve as the short-term solution for a deep draft port to supplement the development activities that are occurring now as well as those in the future. We have the existing port facility, adequate fuel storage, expanded medical facilities with the new construction of the hospital, air transportation with an airport that has a crosswind runway, and community structure already in place to accommodate the growth for economic development. As Senator Olson said, in 81, a port master plan was completed that identified the need to construct a 3,600-foot-long causeway. Unfortunately, in 95, because of funding constraints, it was only constructed to 2,712 at minus 22.5. This is a shortfall of 888 feet needed to address and complete the design for us to get to minus 35. We do partner with the Corps of Engineers to review and revise the prior design work. And just to note that the granite comes from Cape Nome, which is 12 miles away here, owned by Bering Straits Native Corporation. The Corps in 2006 completed an additional breakwater, 3,025 feet, and extended a spur for 270 feet at the end of the causeway. This helps protect the vessels that are moored at the causeway. We also have completed many improvements within the port and harbor in partnership with NSCDC, our CDQ for the region, along with the State of Alaska and EDA. With this historic winter refueling event that happened in January here in Nome, the icebreaker Healy was able to break shore fast ice within 460 yards at the end of the causeway to allow the Renda to transfer fuel. The Renda was parked in 38 feet of water. The Healy was arrested 865 yards east of the Renda in 40 foot of water. So we have a short way to go, anywhere from 800 to 1,000 feet is all we need to get to that deep water there. The data available on the Northern Waters Task Force website, the Marine Exchange, provides the number of crossings through the strait. In 2009, 277 crossings happened. 2010, 338. We're waiting for the 2011 statistics. Here within Nome, we've seen an increase in the traffic. In 1990, there were a mere 30 port calls. By 2009, it increased tenfold to 304. The peak time of this port activity is when vessels are traversing through the Bering Straits as they pass through Nome on their journey to explore the OCS. This year, Shell plans to have 22 vessels support their operations. Next year, there may be two oil companies conducting exploration, and then indications are that in the third year, there may be three companies. So we can see this huge increase coming and seeing the need for a deep draft port. The investment in Nome Port and Harbor will support and enable our country to protect our expanding economic fishery interest. An immediate and important benefit of this investment with the city's infrastructure will be the increase in efficiency in rural Western Alaska logistical support. With improvements to the port, it is hoped that resource development may become more economical for the private sector operations and result in continuous stimulus to the region and state economy. The city also supports the governor's Western Alaska Western Access Study, which is the transportation corridor from the interior to Western Alaska. This route allows access for resource development. Extending the port would tie in the needed infrastructure to allow those resources to be stored in Nome and barged out. We continue to advocate to Congress to provide additional resources to assist in the Coast Guard and also recommend the Coast Guard consider Nome for a seasonal forward operating location. We are definitely seeing a trend where our winter ice is free earlier in the year and freezes later in the season. Improving on the existing port infrastructure would improve our capability to provide our nation with critical nodes of homeland security and allow increased security presence to the Arctic. Nome is also a prime location to allow for more timely emergency response to monitor environmental concerns. We support the Alaska Marine Shipping Assessment and the Northern Waters Task Force recommendation for future investment and partnerships for communities to develop this needed infrastructure. And in closing, as the mayor said, the borough mayor, we do support all of these port requests. We are a huge state. It's from consider this from Seattle all the way down to California without this infrastructure. So any requests that come in from Dutch all the way to Barrow, we fully support, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Any questions for Mayor Michaels? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here today. For the record, the amendment was /A1. And is there an objection to that amendment? Seeing none, then the amendment is added to the CS. Senator Olson, any comments?
I just want to thank the committee for their foresight and for their ability to go ahead and see this very necessary port that's out there. Both the port in Cotsby and the port in Nome will greatly appreciate their efforts from here.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close public testimony. It's my intention to move this bill over to finance. There are a lot of other ports that want to be included in this, and finance would certainly be the area that which has the expertise and background to consider them, including Kodiak, which was here today, and other communities that have called in to ask to be considered. So I'd like to ask for a motion to move this bill out of committee as amended to finance committee, to the next committee of referral, which is the finance committee. Senator Thomas?
Chairman, I move that committee substitute for Senate Bill number 163 /M as amended be moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal. Well, I didn't see any fiscal.
Undetermined.
We know what undetermined, yeah. At this point in time, I'm sure it is. Wait, the Fairbanks one's not here yet, so we.
Okay, thank you very much. Any objection? Senator Huggins.
Objection for comment.
Okay.
I mean, I think I look around this room, and most people know what we're up to here. So I won't go into that very far. I'm going to support this, but, you know, we have now raised by 25% an hour and a half the size of the bond. And, you know, there at some point there will be a tipping point of this. And I just would ask us all, and I'm not saying that the two were put in here today fall any place low in the order of merit, because maybe they should be first. I don't know that. But what I do know is that we all have to be responsible at some point in time and understand both the user point and those that are voting for this, that there is a tipping point. And to load this up may in fact mean nobody gets anything, and that may be okay. We'll save a whole bunch of money. But with that, I remove my objections.
Thank you very much. Any other objections? Or, yes, Senator Menard, comments?
I do. I also want to go on record. I am growing weary of the additional projects that I can foresee being added to these this bond. And the issue is, I don't want to get it to the point where the governor becomes uncomfortable and we jeopardize the projects that he feels that he wanted to put in the bill. So I just want to go on record to saying that. I see the potential of it really growing.
Thank you very much. If we want to, we can cut anchorages by 50% and we'd be in good shape. The rest of the state needs to be considered here, and I really appreciate the idea that we've added Nome and Kotzebue, because if you look at this, $310 million were going into Anchorage and the Mat-Su borough, and $40 million was going into the rest of Alaska. So I think that this is an appropriate step, and I am very comfortable with doing this. Any other concerns or comments? If not, hearing no objection, then this is moved to the next committee referral. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.